When you hear a big idea from a presidential candidate, you often want to ask them, wait, how exactly would that work? We've been giving undecided voters a chance to sit down with candidates and go off script, asking them those questions. This past weekend, I went to Midtown Manhattan to Bodega, which is a dumpling shop, to talk to Andrew Yang. Two voters were with us. John Zeitler is an attorney for an insurance company, and Hethel Johnny runs a nonprofit that's focused on education and mentorship. Yang is a political newcomer. As a young guy, he worked as a party planner, and Johnny started with a question for him.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds, from the Breakfast Club soundtrack.
Yeah, very cool.
And then When Doves Cry by Prince would be a close runner-up.
Can you give us a couple bars?
Yeah.
How can you just leave me standing, alone in a world that's so cold? It's like Prince himself is here singing.
This is the first time that Yang has run for political office. His signature proposal, the Freedom Dividend, is a form of universal basic income. It would give every American adult $1,000 a month from the government, no strings attached. Hethel and John wanted to know how that would work and who's going to pay for it.
How did you come up with $1,000? Because $1,000 here in New York City or San Francisco is a lot different than anywhere else. So as a nonprofit founder, $12,000 a year would go far, but it wouldn't go that far.
But it does make sense on many levels because $12,000 a year is right below the U.S. poverty line. So it moves you up to that level. And this is per adult, mind you. So if you have two adults in your household, it's $24,000 a year. So it moves you up and gets the pressure off, but it doesn't serve as a full work replacement where there's virtually no American who's like, oh, I'm going to quit my job. We got $1,000 a month. Like that's not really sure. John here is like, you know, not ready to pack it in $1,000 a month because, you know, you have a family like I do. So it's enough to be a game changer, but it's not meant to be a full work replacement, and it's certainly not meant to solve every problem.
Can I ask you to do some quick math for us?
Sure.
Okay. How many adults in the United States would be eligible for this $12,000 a year?
So if you were to take a broad number, about 200 million.
200 million times $12,000 a year.
$2.4 trillion.
$2.4 trillion a year this would cost. Okay. John, I know you have a question about that.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Sure. So I think you said that you'd fund it with a VAT tax, which would I understand to be a tax, you know, broadly across, you know, consumption of goods versus a wealth tax, which would be a tax on, you know, the wealthiest Americans. So you have this great income inequality in the country, and it makes sense that you sort of take from those who have the most and even it out, and that would seem to point to a wealth tax. So why a VAT tax instead?
I endorse the spirit of a wealth tax. The problem is that when they tried a wealth tax in France, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and a half dozen other countries, they ended up repealing it because it didn't generate the revenue they thought it would, and they had massive implementation and compliance problems.
But isn't a VAT tax essentially regressive in the sense that everybody's paying the same tax, but if you're poorer, that, you know, that dollar means a whole lot more to you, you know, to buy food and, you know, essentials versus a dollar for someone who's a millionaire or billionaire.
So you're 100% right about everything you're saying. The fundamental challenge we have in the U.S. is that we have this tax system that is being gamed to incredible degrees. So you have a $1 trillion tech company like Amazon that's now closing 30% of America's stores and malls, literally paying zero in taxes. And so you have to look around and say, okay, now that should not be. Because we're in an era of unprecedented technologies and innovation. Our data is now worth more than oil, as an example. And we're seeing none of that. The companies that are seeing that value are Amazon, Facebook, Google, and these mega tech companies.
Let me ask you to define what a value-added tax actually means.
It's a tax on value transfers, which you can think of as what John said, consumption, sales. We can fund this dividend that will make us stronger, healthier, mentally healthier. And if we don't make this kind of move, then we're going to be stuck looking at each other and wondering what the heck happened to our communities as the truck driving gets automated, the malls close, the call centers get replaced by bots and software. The fact is we're already decades behind the curve. It has brought us Donald Trump. And unless we get our heads up and start solving for the real problems, they're just going to get worse.
How do you know that the big companies are not going to push that cost, the tax that they're going to be paying, back off onto the consumers? I mean, sure, we can choose how to spend it, and you should be spending it on necessities, but you're going to make people choose, right? You're also seeking to pay for the freedom dividend at the cost of other programs.
I think we just need to explain that very briefly, and it's an important point. If a family currently is getting welfare payments, SNAP, food stamps, WIC, et cetera, and they're getting $700 a month in welfare, under your system, that would go away. So I think what Hethel is asking is, if you're taking away people's welfare payments and replacing it with $1,000, is that enough?
I see the freedom dividend as like a foundation or a floor. And then you don't stop building a house at the floor. It's kind of a crummy house, you know. So first, I would not want to get rid of any existing government programs. I would never be the sort of person who says, like, hey, there are millions of Americans relying upon something. Let's pull the rug out from under them.
I would still keep getting my payments?
No, so there is an opt-in. The freedom dividend is universal and opt-in. And if you do opt into the freedom dividend, then you do forego benefits that are from certain programs that are cash and cash-like. But if you're if you love your current benefits, or let's say you're receiving $1,800 in current benefits, then I would never touch it. So that's one thing. So to me, we have to do so much more. I would never suggest that $1,000 a month is going to do the work for us.
In the case that you don't become president, how are you going to continue to work on these ideas to make sure that we're addressing everything we've discussed?
These problems are going to be with us no matter what. And I'm very confident I'll have a lot of work to do, whether it's as president or in some other capacity. But I'm a parent like you are, John, and I see the future we're leaving for our kids, and I find it to be unacceptable. And so I'm going to work my heart out to try and make it better.
That was Andrew Yang and two undecided voters for our series Off Script. You can see more interviews with candidates and watch the video of our entire conversation with Andrew Yang at npr.org/offscript.